to the edit. It's, oh, wait, hold on. Didn't I have a phrase? I had a phrase. Oh, well, you know, there was a phrase. It's Esquire Middle East's weekly look back at everything that's going on in your world, in our space, really. So that's not our physical space. That would be men's lifestyle in the region. I am Matthew Baxter-Priest, and I am here, as always, with my fellow Esquireans, Nasri Atala and William Mullally. How are you doing, boys?
Hello.
Esquireans?
Esquireans.
Esquireans?
Men of Esquire.
Men sounds and like women that musical Hair. You remember that musical Hair? Esquireans. I don't know. Sorry, no. This is way too old.
The dawning of the age.
Forget it.
The age of Esquireans.
There you go. Exactly.
What good is sitting alone in your room? There you go. That's all I've got for musical wise. I hate musicals. I'm not a musical man. Nasri, are you a musical man?
No. There you go.
In word.
Strong opinions. I like musicals. I like musicals if I don't feel like the songs are wasting my time. That's the thing. I remember as a kid, it would be like the plot would stop because they're singing a song. I'm like, we need to keep moving. No, you need to get there. Like, I hear that.
100%. I really, really don't like exposition in song when someone's like, or the only time I'll allow it is when in 1980s cartoons, mm-hmm. when the narrator would used to have to explain the background story in the first minute of the mm-hmm. animation. So it'd be like, in Dungeons and Dragons,
I love that.
Four children lost in a mine. This is Dungeon Keeper, and he is the guide. And you're just like, this is great.
That's the best form of exposition.
This is good. The only guy who can do it in song well is probably Robin Williams in Aladdin. Just like, bring you into Agrabah. I'm like, okay, I'm on board. He did it. But in general, no, I feel like with musicals, people are just so set on making them musicals to make them feel like musicals. And so nothing ever feels organic. You know,
are you throwing shade at Lin-Manuel here?
Yeah, I was gonna say, is this in the heights?
In the heights, subtweeting. Hamilton is one of the most exhausting experiences of my life.
Ooh.
I like when it's just like he's like, hey, can you do five songs for a Disney movie? And then they're just five bangers, whatever. Sure. But when you give him the ball, it's too many songs. Sorry, Lin, just stop it. You're a genius, but I don't need it thrown in my face.
This would have been a great take 5 years ago. Like, seriously, Hamilton.
I'm going anti-Hamilton. Totally out of the discourse.
I watched Tick, Tick, Boom the other day. So as a man who doesn't like musicals, okay, this is an Andrew Garfield film that came out about a year ago.
Yep.
Oscar bit of buzz around it. Didn't realize it was a musical. But not only that, it's a musical about a guy who made musicals.
Uh-huh.
So there's songs about the guy making the songs and the songs that he's made. It's a double musical. Man,
I
could not have picked a worse audience to tell you that. I don't even know why I watched it. I watched it all the way. It was good, but it was
Andrew
just
Garfield.
Not. It was just not my thing.
Directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
There you go. Segue to heaven.
It's like, yeah.
I mean, Matt, how's it going, boys? Or tell you what, let's segment it. Well, no, let's. How have you both been? You've both. We've all been in and out of the country over the past couple of weeks, to our regular listeners, hence the last week's absence. But where have we been? What have we been up to?
I feel like I'm still adjusting to two trips ago's time zone.
Yeah, I was going to say, your time zone jumping is not healthy.
No, it's really not. Like, I've had a cold for like the last 2 weeks. I don't know, just sniffling. I feel like I'm like 8 years old again, like going to wipe it on my sleeve. But no, I went to the U.S., interviewed our next cover star, who we're not going to reveal yet.
Mr. January.
Had a nice little catch up with him. And then was just in the UK to speak to James Cameron and the cast of Avatar: The Way of Water.
Magnificent. When you say the cast, how many of the cast?
So they did hold people off, and they were very, very limited with this. So there was a lot of journalists there who were just like, oh, I don't get to talk to James. I don't get to talk to Kate Winslet, Sigourney Weaver. They were very, very held off. So I didn't realize how lucky I was. But the fact that it was like, yeah, I'm sitting in a room and it's 10 in the morning and there's Sigourney Weaver and it's just Sigourney Weaver.
I know.
Yeah, right.
And then it's Kate Winslet 10 minutes
later. I
didn't
realize Kate Winslet was in it. I think I must have missed the memo on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And someone was just like, probably as Will's about to do to us, be like, what do you mean? And I feel like I'm being gaslit on that. Yeah. I'm just like, what? Was that a known thing?
No, and I think you can also watch the movie and never know she was in it, you know?
Fine.
Because
she's a Na'vi.
Yeah, she's a Na'vi. So, like, basically, it's like, I'm not even pronouncing it right. They kept saying it in a certain way. It was like my Navi accent. I'm sorry. I'm like culturally appropriating. It's not good.
Jake Sully.
Yeah, Jake Sully. Who honestly, like, he's the least interesting character in all these movies, which I find fascinating. Like, he's just not interested in his main character. There's so many other things going on. And Kate Winslet's character is great. But again, you don't focus on the fact that she's Kate Winslet because it's so immersive.
So you went to interview the cast and you saw the film as well?
I did see the film.
Okay, cool.
I have seen it. So we'll talk more about it next week.
Because it is out next week?
It is out on the 16th.
16th of December.
16th of December.
It's going to make $1 trillion, apparently.
I mean, honestly, I hope so. Like, I'm rooting for Avatar.
Wait, you got a stock options? What are you?
James Cameron's like, here's a cut. You get 0.0%. And
isn't it like Matt Damon? $1 million. Do you know that story about like Matt Damon was meant to be in the original Avatar and he said he couldn't do it because he was doing like one of the Bourne movies. And James Cameron offered him 10% of like revenue from the films. And to this day, he's like, it's probably the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life, which is walk away from 10% of Avatar, you know, box office.
Would it have been as good with Matt Damon?
I think it works better with a non... I mean, honestly, I don't really remember Avatar. I watched it, what was it, 20 years ago? And it feels like a million years ago.
No, I think he should be a nobody, yeah. Because yeah. I don't think you're supposed to care about this guy.
Sure. Yeah.
He's there to be like a function of something greater.
Avatar is a theme park ride. It's not a film. Like, you're in this world. And he says, like, the world is the main... I mean, that's what he used to say.
I mean, I disagree that Avatar is a theme park ride.
Yeah?
Okay. No, but I think it is in the fact that it's, like, pure spectacle. And it's, I think, a movie that's meant to be experienced emotionally first and foremost. Because he's just that good at making you feel things. And you don't really process it intellectually. But that doesn't mean that there's not anything there that it's not serving a purpose. Mm. Whereas, like, Marvel films... Again, we know I love Marvel films, but... They are candy at the end of the day. I'm also a big candy fan, which makes sense that I love Marvel films. But it's just...
Candy
there's just
during a Marvel film is the peak experience.
That's big Will.
Just pour it right into my popcorn there. A gigantic Diet Coke, just unseemly amounts of Diet Coke. But no, it's at the end of the day, there's nothing to process. There's no nutrients. Mm. Whereas Avatar, I feel like this is the spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down. Hmm. And people don't really focus on the medicine. So that honestly, we'll talk about this more next week, but that's kind of what I wanted to focus on. Because I feel like the substance of what Avatar actually accomplishes, even if you don't intellectualize it, is there.
Cool.
And I feel like he dives more into that Way of Water. It's not a purposeful pun, but we got there in the end. Is really diving even deeper into
very
the...
Well done.
Thank you.
What you can't see at what you can't see at home is the nodding appreciation to that pun there. So it never goes unthanked here at Esquire. We can hear more about that next week when you guys tune in again, stream whichever it is. We'll unpick some of his interview stuff and give you some exclusives ahead of that film release. Nazu, you're just back from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
I am, yes. I was there for the XP Music Conference, which happens right before the big Soundstorm Middle Beast crazy festival. 250,000 people, I think, this year.
Wow.
But just about every DJ and artist and band on the planet. It was really exciting, actually. It was really fun.
What's the energy like in town, in Riyadh?
It's kind of bonkers. Like, I don't know, like when you just walk... I was in this hotel with... Which is funny, actually, this hotel I was at, like a lot of people from the conference were at. So like, I went down to breakfast on the first day and I was like, oh, my Spotify playlist is here. I just like looked around. I was like, there's Feluka, there's Narsi, there's, you know, I was just like pointing at Nadina Ruby. I was like, oh, no, that's cool. Like, this is just my Spotify playlist. But then I went for a walk around the hotel and everyone was like kind of a bit eccentric and weird. And I don't know, like, it just felt like a very, like there's an energy in the air that's... pretty interesting. And then at XP itself, where there were gigs every night, people were kind of, you know, it's funny because of the changes that have happened in the last 5 years, you feel like everyone's still finding their footing in terms of like personal style. And so it's like this crazy mishmash of styles. Like one guy came up to me, like, he's like, oh, I've styled myself on Alice Cooper. And I was like, oh, cool.
So a Saudi guy.
Saudi guy who's in a punk band. And I was like, that's very interesting. Cool. Like, I mean, makes sense. Why not? But sure. I hadn't like expected that going there. And then, yeah, so it's like, there's like the hip hop subculture and the rock subculture and this and that. And it's just really interesting to see. And, I don't know. Can't wait to go back, really. So, I'd missed the big, like this, the Soundstorm experience.
Sure.
Honestly, I'm just gonna say I'm a bit too old. I don't know. I've never liked 250,000 crowds is a bit too much for me.
I think you have JOMO, honestly, on that one.
What's JOMO? The joy of missing out. Yeah. It was nice seeing the Instagram stories, but I was happy I was on my couch.
I was still skipping the Instagram stories. I couldn't even wait the 15 seconds.
Well, speaking of Instagram stories, you guys probably would have been or seen that Dior held its massive kind of men's winter, fall winter fashion show in Cairo.
Which you were at.
Yeah.
Which also everyone in the world was at. Anyone that wasn't in Saudi was there. Exactly. I'm just I kept seeing more people. I'm like, really?
Yeah, or interviewing the James Camerons of the world. Fair. It was, I've been to a bunch of fashion shows around the world as courtesy of the job, the joys of what we've just been discussing is how widely traveled we can be to help, transmit and inform the culture around here. But this show in Cairo was unreal in terms of a blockbuster. Now, the way I'm kind of thinking about it, phrasing it, how we kind of communicate it is the simplest way to tell you guys is that it feels like Avatar is, the return of the mega blockbuster. This is the return of the fashion blockbusters. The fashion powerhouse show is back. It was on every news site, every website that covers kind of fashion. You don't use the Great Pyramids of Giza as a backdrop and it go unnoticed. No one's done it before. The scale they had, nearly 200 different models and looks.
Really?
Men's fall winter collection from Dior, designed by Kim Jones. And what was interesting about it was that it was very, while it was, I suppose the, when speaking to them, while finding that it was not directly inspired by Egypt, but in that really kind of hokey, cliche way, what it was is it was inspired by the kind of the way that ancient Egypt was obsessed with the celestial world and the stars and reading what the stars meant to them in terms of their gods and design work. So a lot of there was celestial prints and a lot of read into how the stars affected it rather than just here's some hieroglyphics turned into walking models. And then, but for taking from that, it was very futuristic. So a lot of the designs, if anyone's seen the pieces, there's like helmets that look like it could have been from Halo.
Right.
There was, guys that looked like beekeepers, but everyone was wearing, the models were wearing ski boots, which had been adapted to, look like kind of futuristic wear you'd have. And I kind of made this joke while we were watching it with at night with the pyramids lit up, and the music was all quite futuristic and offbeat, and the light show over the top of it was incredible. And I said at this moment, if aliens do exist, this is the closest we've come to basically offering them a welcome, show up, because we are at the ancient sites of the pyramids, we're lighting them up, we're doing a light show, we're playing alien futuristic music, dressed like spacemen.
They'll feel right at home.
Yeah, I was you guys have got a half an hour to show up to show aliens exist, so this is our welcome. It didn't happen, I kept around the people on the front row. I kept whispering it, so everyone was getting a bit tense. But any moment there, we were expecting the Great Pyramid to literally just open up.
Ancient aliens,
yeah, and be like, "Well, it took you guys long enough. Took you 2,500 years to come back." But no, it was a whole thing. It was a whole thing.
And to tie this back to Avatar, which I'll be doing with everything for the next few weeks, I feel like a lot of the fashion shows that get the press right now are very, anti-fashion show, deconstruction of the fashion show. Like, they're a cynical take on the fashion show, a Balenciaga type thing. Whereas this is just unfiltered, unpretentious, just we are doing a fashion show. This is the best version of what that is. We're not trying to reinvent it. We're just doing a good version of that, which takes guts.
It felt very Karl Lagerfeld-y, just this is a show. Like Alexander McQueen,
famous. I mean, he used to like burn cars and stuff, like that famous show where he lit a car on fire.
Yeah,
but I'm not even sure it was supposed to be on fire, but if I remember from the documentary properly. But yeah, it does feel on that epic scale, which is kind of interesting, and also because it's away from the noise of a fashion week and all that stuff. It has time to breathe, and everyone has time to pay attention to it. Which I feel doesn't happen so much anymore in this Actually, I just remembered what I was in Saudi to do, which is talk about the attention economy. So actually, this is which I should have been paying attention. But it was exactly that. Like, how do you like make an impact when there's just so much noise every day? Everyone's communicating about stuff, and the trick is you just do it when no one else is doing stuff, and you do it bigger than everyone else. So yeah,
fair.
There's something you guys tapped on earlier, it was you, Nasri, but we're going to segue it into our first section of news, views, and shoes. So you mentioned that when you came down to the lobby in your hotel, it mm-hmm. was like your walking Spotify playlist. Yeah. So for one of the main things and news stories that's been popping up all week for us and our readers has been the release of this year's 2022 Spotify Wrapped lists. Mm-hmm. What we've been doing well here on Esquire is wrapping up the looks at the most popular artists in the region. Most popular are Arab artists on the list. But I want to know on a personal level, how are your raps? Are you guys happy with them? Are you a little bit embarrassed by them? Give me the dirt.
I think it's funny because I feel like it's become, for a lot of people, the way they want to present themselves to the world.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So there was even like people that were like, by the way, the date for your Spotify Wrapped stops at this date, so you need to just get in all the streams you want people to see by the end of this date.
No.
Really, so people were just spamming, what have you. My favorite was all the people that had like Mice Repellent as their number one song, because apparently there's a song on that, if you play it loud enough, will scare away mice. No. So it's a lot of people that just like, Mice Repellent, my number one track of the year. But no, I did feel like it's also like a moral signifier. Like, people want to show off how cool they are, or how woke they are, what have you, with these lists. So I had people that were coming at me just being like, this is like the most basic white list I've ever seen because I had Radiohead on it. I'm just like, what? Four of the other people of these are Brazilian people who haven't made music in 50 years who you've never heard of. How do you say that? They're like, well, I saw Radiohead. So
I felt like, what a weird thing to come after. My favorite one is I saw someone who shared like, this is like peak parenting. And it was like, he had whatever, the soundtrack from Bluey, then like Slipknot, then like another, like, you know, Coco Melon, then like another, like Korn. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, this is like,
there's kiddie time and there's daddy time. Yeah. When you drop the kid to school, and then when the kid's dropped off at school, it's your drive to work.
No, I shared mine. So like, I was like, I'm proud enough to share this. I was like, not surprised, but I mean, I think it's always, everyone's like, oh, you're all idiots sharing this like data-driven, distillation of who you are. You're losing your soul. But I'm like, well, I mean, when I had CDs, I used to count like, oh, how many Radiohead CDs do I have? How many Beatles CDs do I have? And I did it that way. This is not like just someone else is doing it for me, I guess. Mm. And I guess my top genre, I can't remember what it was, but it was like, it generally was like disco, French, pop, Egyptian hip hop, Sudanese hip hop. It was like a pretty eclectic, and I was like, yeah, that checks out. Like, I was like, that's what I like. So, you know, it's obviously doing something right. Yeah,
it's a good moment of reflection, I think.
Yeah.
Like, how you wouldn't be able to see this data otherwise unless they showed it to you. So it's not like you can know what you're really listening to. Because I think a lot of times people have ideas, and this is why Netflix also keeps changing their algorithm, because they keep finding that people would rate things that they want to like higher than things that they actually like.
Right.
So you might think of yourself as the guy who listens to only, you know, this obscure genre, when you're actually the guy who only listens to Taylor Swift.
Yep.
And it's like, unless Spotify tells you, no, you only listen to Taylor Swift, you will never admit this to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's interesting. I've just brought up mine. I took a couple of screen grabs because I will share, but only privately. You know me. Two interesting facts on mine. One is the total playtime.
Mm.
Mine was 43,000 minutes, which basically puts me in the top 3% of Spotify listeners in the whole of the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is, if you break that down, that's how many days?
It's something like 15 days of just listening, like whatever, like literally no sleep, just listening to Spotify.
Oh, wow.
So I'm apparently in the top 3% of Spotify listeners, which I was talking to a bunch of people, my mates and stuff, and a lot of them listen to, like, you know, Angami and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it is limited to Spotify. So I'm not the top 3% listeners of music.
Yeah.
But anyway, on Spotify, apparently, but I listen to a lot of podcasts. The other one that got me...
I was
going to
say, is podcasts in there? Because like, that would probably add a lot, yeah.
The podcast is on it is... it was a case of 15,500 minutes of podcasts.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, it's how I, but more interesting than that is my top five songs were all from the same artist. and four of them were from the same album, which led me to thinking it's more of a case of people use Spotify ultimately to listen to kind of one-off tracks. As predominantly, it's more track-based listening rather than album-based listening. So I do think like wrap-ups and reviews like this are skewed, especially when you're looking at like, if there's one album that you listen to or you're listening to consecutive albums, it skews the ranking because all of a sudden it's 10 to 12 tracks or 15 tracks of one artist, as opposed to just like the bangers or the one hits or the other things. So they are, you can read into them what you can, but again, I don't think it correctly covers the listening in terms of multiple ways. So if it's album listening, I think it's pretty skewed. If it's if it's individual kind of single listening, I think it's actually quite accurate.
Yeah, I think it's also like, it's kind of a signifier of just how you process life. And I've seen other people make this metaphor, so it's not original thought. But as in playlist culture is the same as like relationship culture.
Okay.
If you're someone who just are sitting on apps all the time and you're just kind of filtering through, you're probably a playlist person at the same time. You take everything in your life this way. Whereas the album people are like relationship people. You know, you want to commit to something, you want to commit to a person, you want to commit to a band, and it kind of just ends up being everything in your entire life. Mm. Whereas I don't know if this holds up for everything. Like, you're the ultimate wife guy. Are you the ultimate playlist guy? Are you?
I am actually. I hated albums when I had albums. Like, I much preferred. I used to buy. Fuck, I sound so old. I used to buy singles.
How old are you, man?
I'm 40. I haven't mentioned that in a while. I used to buy singles that had just like the track I wanted to listen to on.
Like CD singles?
Yeah, CD singles.
So they weren't 45s.
They weren't 45s.
Okay, fair.
I used to have them on the A-track in my GTO. No, but like I used to love singles. Then I'd buy albums because I thought that's what like people who liked music, this is like what we were talking about earlier with like film, like, oh, like people who like film like this kind of film, so I should like this kind of film, but actually I'd be super bored while I was watching it, but I would tell everyone I loved it. And same with music, like I'd have this album, like, oh yeah, you know, like I love to listen to it like multiple times in a row. Actually, I just had like one track I used to like to listen to on OK Computer or whatever it was. So I actually really love like playlist culture. The thing I don't like is like I sometimes realize like Discover Weekly, I'll just be a bit lazy and I'm like, oh, I'll just pop my Discover Weekly on, and I rarely like drag a song into a playlist and go like, okay, I need to check like who I'm actually listening to. I'll just like put it on like almost like Muzak, like, you know, and not really know who the artist is, where this is coming from, what year it's from. And like that I don't like. So I've been like much more intentional of like, no, actually, you know what? Like I like this genre. So I'm going to go to a mix, like a pre-made playlist of this, and then drag in, like I need to do some work here. Like I'm not going to just let the algorithm do everything. I'm going to find some stuff and then curate from the algorithm stuff that I actually like. And that's why like when I see my Wrapped, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And I did go back and see like last year's and the year before's just to see how I've evolved or like what was going on. And obviously 2020 was a weird one because I was stuck at home. Like we're having like parties at home, like alone, like me and my wife. So I was like, oh, it's all like, you know, 90s dance music, which obviously isn't what I would listen to normally, but like it was just like, oh, we're all gonna die, so let's listen to some stuff that makes us feel 14 again.
Robin S. Yeah, there we go. Exactly.
Republica ready to go. They rocked up at the World Cup the other week. That was amazing. Cool. That's right. What else has been crossing your inboxes this week, dudes?
We got Soul DXB coming up.
Yeah, that's speaking this weekend.
Speaking of, you know, streetwear. Honestly, I've been talking to especially a lot of people in the U.S. and the refrain right now is that streetwear is dead. People are just moving on. It's all prep. It's all whatever. It's also like, you know, I'm related to one of the guys who's running J. Crew right now, so I'm biased probably because they want that to be the narrative. But like at the same time, it's just I do feel like, you know, Jordans are kind of sitting on shelves. People aren't really having this, but I feel like UAE just is one of the like the last bastions of like street culture and the way that, you know, this has kind of traditionally worked. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, all these people finally come back together when they haven't been able to since 2019, as we mentioned before. And
yeah, they skipped a couple of...
having like Georgia Smith, Central C, Marwan Pablo, Amine, you know, coming to town is great. It's really cool because normally the only people that are going to come here are like Bieber unless he gets sick and cancels again. So it's cool to have, you know, these smaller little intimate things, which is, you know, something that other countries are usually spoiled with. Mm. But honestly, it's more, I think, it's a cultural union. It's like, it's Comic-Con for cool people, I guess you can say.
Look, that could be the tagline as far as I'm concerned, Comic-Con for cool people. Let's make a note of that, put it up on the website later today. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's a subculture gone mainstream. And I always used to think this element here. I've been in the region now for like 12 years, and we always used to look at it as in being like, what happens, say, in more advanced markets would take 5 years to come here. I don't think it's the same anymore. No. It's certainly a shorter time frame, but still, it's not like we are the breakthrough market at any point. It's much more of a tested somewhere and then comes here as a secondary market. Yeah. But that is certainly the case when, you know, people are turning away from literally looking at Dior, not a lot of streetwear at all on the on that runway, which is not something they shied against for the last few years. So the idea is, but I think you're right. Like, I think streetwear will remain here for maybe a couple more seasons, but the weakening will happen. But what's interesting on that, do you think that is just because temperature here, like, do you think that it's
like
a
literally
bit,
the climate
literally the climate here, or the fact that, you know, it's a very entrepreneurial based society and industries that we all are super flexible. I mean, yes, we work in media, but so many other industries are relying on kind of still working from home or flexi work and that element here in the UAE.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, but I do think that this is, I mean, I think it's events like Seoul that have allowed us to kind of start an exporting culture.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
But at the same time, I do think that the interesting thing about here is, yeah, it's a melting pot, salad bowl, et cetera. I think the ways that things confuse and come into our culture is not necessarily run by just the way that we live by, but it's also like who's moved here, who's basically come up, how that has interacted with this over here. And so I think the way that our cultural ends up moving, especially also because it's just way more compressed than other countries.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Is fascinating to watch it unfold. And
because the thing, like, you know, I think a lot of people are most excited, for example, like about Marwan Pablo or Feluca or Freak or whatever. So like the, maybe not like, I mean, in Freak's case, like he is UAE based, but regional talents, also like the whole Seoul DXP thing is being curated or program, I don't know what the exact term is, but by Hassan Hajjaj, who's the, you know, it's like great artist from the region, from North Africa. And I think like there's, it feels like it's almost like half-half at this point. Like it used to be like you just import a bunch of stuff.
Sure.
And now it feels like it's like half imported, half locally produced, whatever the term is. I don't know if that extends to like, that's on the like music side, on the clothing side, like the actual brands. I also think like a significant amount of the brands represented are like regional streetwear brands. And obviously there's the global, like, you know, behemoths that are there as well. But I think it just like legitimizes further the local ones, and they do collab. I don't know. It's just like an interesting, I think it's like as mature as it's ever been, like in terms of an ecosystem. And yeah, like I've never been much of a streetwear guy, as you can tell. Like I've never, like I don't, you know, probably don't own a hoodie or anything, like, you know, I haven't given a hoodie, but like I'm not but I think it's the kind of thing like probably like trend wise it'll diminish, but like the people who dress that way will dress that way forever, because it's become like kind of accepted. But maybe, yeah, like maybe like the big fashion houses will shy away from it for a few seasons. But
I'm curious to find how it goes this year once it's come back, because I think there's a super excited sense of anticipation of it, but I do think there's a lot of caution around it as well from like brand investments and things like that. So I think it will be the biggest one that's been done. And I think next year will, should it all go well, and I'm sure it will, but I think next year could be like double. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think a lot of people are watching it from a market perspective. And then once it kind of reestablishes itself after post-COVID and kind of dormant for a couple of years, I think it could really launch into something much bigger. But that, like, you know, we could be looking at ourselves around this table in a year's time thinking that was ridiculous, because as we just discussed, the streetwear could be on the decline, and then it's about what sold us from there.
The cool kids will remain being the cool kids. Sure. So whatever they're doing, I think, is whatever that becomes.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, I think Seoul is malleable enough to not just be like Jordans.
Sure. You know? You just need to change the name to Soul.
But you know, like, it's funny because for me as a non, like before I moved here, like for me, I never associated, I was like, this is a music festival.
Sure.
Like I never associated it with like streetwear. I thought streetwear was like the secondary thing. And only when I like read into it, I'm like, oh, that's how it started. Then it shifted to music. Sure. So, and and obviously Soul spelled S-O-L-E, I read it as like it's a fun take on Soul, S-O-U-L. but I never,
because it wasn't a soul and blues festival. Yeah,
yeah. No, I'm okay. But I think it's like, I mean, it's a strong enough brand to like to shift. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to keep an eye on like what's happening. I don't know. I'm happy if streetwear stops being a thing.
I mean, there's, I think. Our entire generation thinks that Santa Claus is spelt with an E because of that one Tim Allen movie. So I think...
That one Tim Allen movie? He's made like...
Those many Tim Allen movies. Those many Tim Allen movies. Which Tim Allen cinematic universe.
Which always cross my...
Tis the season.
Which always cross my radar every December. By the way, in a couple of weeks, in the lead up to like Christmas and stuff, we're going to do a whole session on
Home
Christmas
Alone.
Films. But I'm just putting that one on your radar. And you at home. Or in your car, wherever you are. Speaking of cars.
Yes.
Naz, you had something this week that would be super interesting to petrolheads around the region.
Yeah. So the Mille Miglia race, which has its origins in Brescia? Brescia?
Brescia. Know.
Brescia. I'll ask the Italian here to tell me how to pronounce that. Obviously, like, you know, nicknamed the most beautiful race in the world. You know, it ran... From, I'm not entirely sure, 1927, I think, to 1956 as a proper race.
Sure.
And it was a bunch of basically petrol heads in that town who were famously their, you know, the oil runs through their veins instead of blood, like petrol. You know, it's that kind of place. And they were like kind of angry that this race had been moved to a neighboring town. And so they launched their own race. And for years, it was like the most competitive race in Europe, and then like there was a bunch of deaths because it was like a very, very dangerous era of like racing where there were very few kind of safety rules or seatbelts worth of thing.
So it's on a track or it's a...
So this is like it's a street race. So like it was in a figure of eight across Italy, and it was about
across the country.
Yeah, like across 1,500 miles, but that works out at 1,000. Not sure. I wrote about this. I should know what I'm talking about. But yeah. So this is the first time it happens outside of Italy. Mm. And so it's happening in the UAE. It's currently happening. Tomorrow, I think, is the last day of the race. It's turned since then into more of a kind of, you know, classic car enthusiast race. There are two other categories, which is, so there's the Mille Miglia category, which is cars that were made during the period of the original race.
Oh, sick. So cars made from the 20s to the 50s.
To the 50s, yeah. So that's like
racing here in the UAE.
Racing here. Yeah, they've shipped, some cars are from the UAE, some have been shipped over. They estimated like $150 million worth of metal like going around the country at the moment. Then there's a category for like classics up to the 70s. Then there's a category for like contemporary supercars, which is just like going to the mall in Dubai, I think. It's just like, you know, it's like, that's like the least exciting if you live in Dubai. But
you're
like
getting arrested.
Yeah.
But Bugatti.
I went to the, actually like the starting, the exhibition day when everyone like puts their, it's at the Dubai Golf and Yacht Club, Dubai Creek. And like they're all parked on the grass. And it's just like, I mean, for me as like someone who loves classic cars, like I kept making sounds. Like and my wife's like, what's going on? I'm like, the gullwing, they opened the door on the gullwing. She's like, what, the guy opened the door of his car? I'm like, yes, but it goes up.
You just don't understand. It goes up, not out. Come on.
Amazing. It was like very exciting to see all the cars there. Plus it's such a, like, you know, by the creek, and it felt like a lot like Pebble Beach was like the famous, like in
the lakes
in Florida. Yeah, and like where they also do like this kind of meetup for classic cars. It goes all around the country, you know, from Dubai to Fujairah, then all the back through Abu Dhabi, it goes to Yas Marina. Mm. And it's another kind of statement, I think, about like the motoring pedigree, like that the region's developing. Mm. So whether it's like, obviously it's the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, there's the Grand Prix in Jeddah, there's Bahrain. There's the Dakar Rally. Yeah,
like the head of the FIA, like the, you know, the literal International Federation of Automotives is Emirati.
Yeah.
It's like the real, I don't want to say it's a grab. It's just a real elevation of importance in the shift in motorsport globally into our region.
Yeah. And I was interviewing Jackie X, who's a like legendary driver.
Cool.
He's a brand ambassador for Chopard. And so we were chatting at this event, and he's actually driving. He's, I think, 78 now. And so he's in one of the cars. But he was like from this era, like he won Le Mans 6 times.
Jesus.
He was like in Formula One, he came second. He was runner up in one of the seasons. He drove the
Paris. So the boy can drive.
Paris-Dakar. Yeah, like he drove in an era where basically like it wasn't as segmented as it is today. You could do whatever. It was like daredevils. Like you could do whatever you wanted in whatever sport. No one was tied down to anything. And he kept telling me, he's like, it's a miracle I survived because that era was, you know, like, you know, a lot of like fiery crashes and like very little safety and no one knew what they were doing. But it was kind of fascinating talking to him. And he said like what he enjoys most about these things is at his age now is like discovering new countries. So he's like, he was so excited to be driving around the UAE. He'd just driven around Oman. And like, he's like, this is, I feel like I can at this age now, like stop and actually talk to people rather than just like barrel through the countryside. Mm. And now he's like, I sit and talk and discover the places I'm going to.
Nice. Well, from vintage old cars to a bit of a shinier side of Dubai, just after the break, we're going to get into a segment that we've got with a very special guest. So see you guys after the break. We're here with a very special guest today, Marwan Al-Wadi, or as social media, Netflix, music fans around the world will know you better as DJ Bliss. What do I call you, man?
Whatever you like. So I always tell people, my mom and dad obviously called me Marwan. Mm. It's weird to call me DJ Bliss, especially when we know each other. So people call me Bliss as a like a easy way to say it. Like my close friends and all, they call me B. So whatever you like, there's a whole bunch of options there.
You're very much considered like one of the, you know, the forefathers or the senior figures in the music industry here.
Yeah.
That is that frustrating? Is it easy? Where is that kind of where you now have that moniker? You know, you're still very young at heart, you know,
yeah.
And you're not old.
Yeah.
You know, so like, but where does that sit with you when everyone's just like, you've been here, done it?
Obviously, I wish it happened sooner, you know, but what does that even mean? Like sure. Sooner can be, time is really something proportional to what you do in your life. So, you know, I heard this story once. I listened to a lot of like audio, motivational audio videos or even audio books. And there was one thing that really stood out when I heard this. It's about the bamboo tree. And the bamboo tree spends years as a root, and then suddenly it just shoots up.
Sure.
You know, and we think of plants as you plant the seed and in a couple of days you see a little leaf pop up, and that's really what you want in life, right? You want to plant the seed and right away see the results of it.
Sure.
But it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes it's the other way. Sometimes it's the bamboo tree, and I think the bamboo tree is really, you know, how it is for me. So doing it all this time and putting the work and putting the effort, and it's not, you know, it's not about me, you know, this is bigger than me. This, you know, I'm representing for my country and my city.
Sure.
For a kid to see that I was able to achieve something, you know, it will motivate them. Like, I didn't really have role models like that as an Emirati, as a local, you know, someone who was born and raised over here. Mm. Growing up, I started my career as a DJ, went into radio and TV, predominantly, you know, expat-driven.
Sure.
Even when I went on radio, I remember I was one of the first people who had an Arabic name on radio.
Sure,
it was one of the first. So, you know, to be an inspiration to other people, to motivate them, to create something over here, I mean, that also makes me happy. Although, you know, going back to the beginning of the question, for sure, I mean, I wish it was sooner, but I'm grateful for the blessing that it came right now.
Well, it's interesting because I have another kind of add-on to that question, but I want to touch on something you just mentioned because, you know, I've been in Dubai now for like over a decade, and you know, having spoken to a lot of my Emirati friends, there's an idea that, you know, that I feel that you kind of go against at the moment. Not you know, it's not abrasive, but it's the case of like a lot of guys would always tell me that when you're speaking on the radio, you know, when someone is speaking on the radio or to a journalist or on record to anything, they feel like you feel like you're speaking on behalf of all Emirati people instead of as an individual.
Yeah.
I think that's weakened significantly now, but certainly back then it wasn't even that long ago, but like certainly there was a lot of that weight on us that everyone would be like, don't really want to express my, you know, personal opinions and stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel that do. I feel that you've helped weaken those boundaries. And I feel that show Dubai Bling is also like that, because it isn't just, you know, marketing Dubai.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great observation, and I think you're 100% right. I don't think we should, you know, not for any nationality, specifically for Emiratis, just because, you know, we're here and we, you know, we are a certain type of way. We have an identity, culture, new country too. 51 years old is very new. So, you know, saying that Emiratis are only like that or only like this, we're kind of judging or grouping everyone together. And for example, someone like me, as a DJ, already you have this notion of he's, you know, the black sheep, not doing what they regularly do. But when you watch what I do, or if you've known me and you see, you know, I still take our culture, our identity, and who we are very seriously. Otherwise, I could have, you know, not that I wanted to, I could have been living the DJ life, like what people expect the life of a DJ to be. And I hope also people get to see it, you know, the way you explained it as well, that we're not all alike. We all have different characteristics. But the important thing is to respect people. We need to be respected. And also we have to give that same respect back. And I feel like whatever you give, you get back. But we live in a day and age where technology, times are changing. Guys are wearing sneakers and Yeezys or whatever with Kanduras. Before it was that was not a thing. And now it's like, you know, I have a friend who's a senior. Well, he's the head of Abu Dhabi Tourism. He's walking around with sneakers and Kandura. You know, that wasn't a, it was not a thing before at all. I mean, it was happening, you know, with some cool kids, but the fact that that's happening now, you had to wear your full headgear everywhere. Otherwise, it was frowned upon. It's not like that anymore either. I hardly wear Kandura, you know, and before it wasn't, you know, they might look at you. Even they used to complain about my accent. When I used to work on radio 10 years ago, people say, why are you putting on an American accent? I said, this is how I sound like.
The worst thing, if you put on an accent that wasn't yours.
Yeah.
It was going back to what you said. I remember Bassem Youssef, the actor and comedian, he told me once, he says, you know, in the Arab world, you can, as a man, you can grow up to be a doctor, an engineer, or a disappointment. So, and it's, you know, but it's that mentality that, you know, he says still persists, but also it's so much weaker now. And you know, you're seeing it, as you said, even at all levels of the corporate world.
Yeah, I'm seeing it for sure. I mean, you know, the era where I started and how it is now. And it's, you know, generations are changing.
Cool. Well, that was the story told from DJ Bliss. If you want to hear more on that, or the extended version of that podcast, you can listen to anything on the Esquire Network podcast feed. It's under the Esquire Q&A section, I believe. Thank you, Marwan. Thank you guys for listening to that. And we move swiftly on to our final segment of the show, which is called Strong Opinions, Loosely Held. So we're back with Strong Opinions, Loosely Held, dudes. I've got one, and it's particularly prevalent today because we kicked off the show talking about how we've been traveling recently. I have a real bugbear on flights where I'm not a great flyer, so I like to sleep as soon as I get on the plane. Ideally, if I can sleep before takeoff, like, I'm in the money. Wake me up somewhere mid-flight. What I do not like is being woken up by, like, cabin crew to be told, like, to be asked if I want to be woken up, or like, I'll be told if I want lunch. We'll be serving lunch at some point. Do you want to be woken up for lunch?
I hate that too.
It's literally nothing infuriates me more, because again, I don't like flying. So if I can be out, like, that is the goal. I don't want to be woken up to be told that to tell someone I don't want to be woken up. Am I wrong here? Am I being a jerk?
What happened to the stickers? They used to have stickers.
I was going to say, isn't stickers a thing? I've heard of these stickers.
Right.
The stickers, like, you could just put it on your shoulder, put it on your seat. Don't wake me up. I've been looking for them because now I have this exact same thing. Especially if I'm like coming 14 hours from the US. If I can somehow hibernate for that entire time, I've made my day. Like yesterday, I was planning on, you know, working for the whole flight, but the Wi-Fi went out in the morning. I like actually watched one of the movies on the screen, which I never do. I'm just like, what am I doing?
Will only watches films like in a cinema by himself that's been pre-booked ahead of time, by the way.
Yeah, at 9 in the morning, which I have to do again tomorrow, I think. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. I don't get the wake up thing, especially because the food's so bad.
Yeah, I mean, look, that is really objective, being woken up for. But my thing about the stickers is
this. Come for the fresh takes. Airplane food is bad.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the deal with airplane food?
Thanks, Jerry. Is everything spinach? Is nothing spinach? We just don't know. My take on that is with the stickers, right? Okay, look, old school technology. Who puts a sticker anywhere, right? We have screens that can like stream live football mid flight. You know, 15,000, 36,000 feet.
Surely you can press something on there.
Surely there's a button that's just like, don't wake me up, like that can be activated on the screen. We've got one of those little doom buttons, you know, like on the armrest, you know, that, you know, I think when you press that button, that's a signal for like, please ignore the button that I've just pressed because it never seemed to work.
Please, everyone hate who's the person sitting in this seat who's requesting something.
So there's got to be ways around it, but just, I don't know, I don't see the logic of it. And when you have like world-class airlines like Emirates, like Qatar Airlines, like that disconnect, it seems, I don't know, it seems to be broken. It's like, it's a real simple customer service thing. Now, yes, this sounds like agony on complaining on it, but Naz, I'm going to ask you now to take the devil's advocate and tell me why it's needed.
Why do I need to be woken up like the hobo who like missed the last stop on the bus? Please,
which is also me, by the way. Like I used to always fall asleep. When I was in London, I'd wake up. I'm like, where am I? I'm like, oh, I'm in Hammersmith bus terminal. Like, why am I in Hammersmith bus terminal?
Right. So the argument is people can't be trusted to sleep. So they're going to miss things.
Well, yeah, I'm going to miss the worst. My bugbear is I can't sleep on planes. Like for some reason, like I find it impossible to sleep on a plane. And the most I can do is like nod off, which is even worse than like, I don't know, like I'll like, you know,
not even in like a nice flatbed business class reclining.
Well, when I'm lucky enough to be sent somewhere in business class, I have been, but even then, like there's just something, I'm a bad sleeper in general. But the nodding off is like, you know, when you start to nod off, then like your head hits your chest and you wake up in a panic. Like that's how I wake myself. I'm the person who annoys myself basically by waking myself up from my very, very short naps.
You snore too, like wake yourself up with your own snore.
Yeah, I've done that before. Yeah.
It's good.
And I look around, I'm like, is everyone looking at me?
Is snoring on a plane one of the most awkward things you can do?
It's so noisy on a plane anyway that I barely hear like, you know, over the sound of like babies crying in the engine and stuff. Like you already hear That's people cry, snoring. Should people wake you up? I think I agree with this. I don't think people should be woken up. If someone's asleep, they should stay asleep.
I think the only argument someone made to me once that I was like, I thought held some kind of water, and that water they give to you when they wake you up when you're sleeping is that if you're paying for like a business class ticket, you're dropping like what, 15K dirhams, like, and maybe you've fallen asleep and they're like, well, you paid 15K dirhams, you have a meal, please consume the products that we have available for you that you've paid that much money for. Don't sleep through it.
But I always wonder, like, surely they can keep the meal for later.
Right.
No? I don't know.
That's the first class thing. Yeah.
This is such such a niche. Like,
I think it's just
please keep my meal.
And then you can get your meal.
I think you can guess when someone wants to be woken up or not. Like, I think you can look at someone who's asleep on a plane and go like, they probably want to be woken up for this.
If I've like put things over my face.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, a mask and my hood up.
A
blanket over me.
Some people look so cozy. Like, actually, right. You know what? That's what angers me on a plane. It's people who like are sleeping really snug and cozy. And I'm like, I hate you. Like, how? First of all, why do you have people who, okay, this is what really, sorry, now I've gone on to plane
stuff. Strong opinion Lucy Hill does. Give me up.
People who wear the neck brace thing, but like throughout the airport and flight and getting, I'm like, you know, you can take this thing off your neck, right? But they just wear it. It's like a cat with the cone on its head. Mm. Like they have this thing around the neck and they just keep dozing off. And then they put the mask on and the earphones and the hoodie and they like snuggle up. I'm like, I hate you.
I'm going to go one further to add to your hatred on that. Couples that do it.
Snuggle together?
No, that like walk around airports with matching little like
they're in like flannel pajamas.
Yeah, It's like we're on a flight. Let's dress the same with the same. I don't get it.
I travel like I'm in the 50s, by the way. I always wear like a blazer and shirt. And I'm like, why am I so dressed?
I am a hat. Going back with now, like, I don't travel well or I don't fly well. Like, I like on the plane, you know, noise cancelling headphones on, sleep as much as I can. If I ever travel with someone, say like my partner, I'm always like, so hey, enjoy the flight. I'll talk to you in about 8 hours.
Really?
Bold. I don't know. I'm very uncomfortable in flights. So it's like, so would I dress up the same? No, I don't even want to like be on a plane with anyone else. It's just like, that is my own private hell. And then I'll see you when I land.
Yeah. When I came back from the US last week, there was two people across the aisle who decided to become friends for 14 hours. They were just talking. At one point I took off my noise canceling headphones and they were just talking about, it's like really, there's just, life is about energy, you know? It's just like, and I'm just like, no. I just wanted to jump. I was going to like pull the emergency exit. I was out. Couldn't do it. No talking. It's not allowed. No making friends. This is not a social time.
Yeah. It's funny because like sometimes I'll be next to someone, I'm like, do you want to like sync up watching a movie together? They're like,
hard
what?
Pass.
No.
Like, hard pass.
Watch your own thing.
Like, can I watch it 5 minutes ahead of you? So I'll be like, you'll love this bit. You'll love this bit. Oh, this bit. So am I fair to say that this opinion stays?
If someone's asleep, let them sleep.
If someone's asleep, let them sleep.
This is a general rule in life, by the way. That's another thing. People wake people up from naps. Like, you know, like, oh, I woke you up from the nap because I thought like if you slept too much, so this isn't about you, Noor.
Yeah.
People, who else is waking up in the
night?
I woke
wife.
Up at the office yesterday. Yeah. Like, why were you sleeping? Seriously, it's not.
Someone's
not
having
cool.
a nap. They're having a great time. Let them nap.
You know, no, babies don't like being woken up. Neither do adults, let's be honest. And the body knows what it wants. I think that's Maradona right. did that once. He was just like, I train when I need to train because I know better than anyone what my body needs.
Legend.
He's pretty good at football. Was pretty good at football. Yeah. So
he's missed at this World Cup because, like,
he put a few things in his body probably didn't need. But it's a different story.
It's probably the reason why he wasn't training or sleeping.
Different film. Mm.
Cool, dudes. Well, that's come to the end of the show. I'm glad we connected on a real energy level on this flight.
It's all about energy.
On
you
this
know?
Flight hatred.
It's nap time now.
tune into another episode of just three dudes complaining about old man stuff. No. Thanks for listening. You want to get your plugs in before we go? Where can people? Oh, just so people know, everything you've heard and heard on this podcast, you can read on esquireme.com. We've got articles on the Media Melia. We got articles on Soul DXB. We got whole lists of Spotify rap breakdown, Spotify raps breakdowns, and our stuff on DJ Bliss. No stuff on planes, but you know, I'm sure we'll get there.
We'll do a column. What really grinds my gears?
5 airplane foods that changed my life.
There you go. You want to see Will's busy schedule when he was in Avatar? Check out him on social media. Where can they find you, bud?
Yeah, just go to @whmullally. Watch my Instagram stories. I'm pretty good at Instagram stories. I think it's one of my better skills. It's very unmarketable, but yeah, we'll get there.
I mean, you'll probably be president of the U.S. in a few years after that.
It's happening.
I'm at Nasri Atala. Yeah, go to Instagram. Twitter's... we didn't do Elon this week. Anyway, whatever.
Oh, we
Twitter's falling
Elon.
Apart still, so let's do Instagram.
All right, I'm making a note. Elon... No, we're running out of time. Elon, we'll do a double length thing on our Elon Musk Evil Order next week. Thanks, guys. Esquire ME. Check out our new issue with Anas Bakash on the cover. It is awesome, as is the rest of that issue. Catch you next week, guys. Enjoy Soul.